Tonight in Arkansas, there's a mother tucking in her daughter and turning off the light. A business owner is burning the midnight oil. An at-home dinner date is plating up possibility. And it's all happening under one roof. How? The power of a conversation. Like the one John from Integrity Solutions had with First Horizon Bank about his vision for a sustainable mixed-use building. Now it's not just words, it's life. First Horizon Bank. Let's find a way. Go to firsthorizon.com/John. First Horizon Bank, member FDIC.
It's time to face the music. It's your day in court with a people's lawyer, Bruce Hagan, and attorney Ray Giudice.
Welcome to your day in court with Bruce Hagan and Ray Giudice. My name is Tug Cowart. You're listening to X3. Download the Extra 106.3 app to listen to this show anytime, anywhere. We always get into great information about the law because everybody at some point is going to be faced with some sort of situation that they need legal counsel and legal advice. And how you get it and who you get it from is very important. And these two are the best in the business. We'll start with how to get a hold of you, Bruce.
Yeah, it's Bruce Hagan, H-A-G-E-N. You can find my website for a lot of information, hagan-law.com. You can call me, 404-522-7553, anytime. Email bruce@hagan-law.com. One thing I would mention about the website, the number one most popular page on our website that's searched and checked out most often is we have a parent-teenage driver contract on there. I had developed this years ago, and my son, who's now a lawyer in my office, was 15 years old and about to start driving, and I threw together a 10-page contract of sort of rights and responsibilities for parents and their teenage drivers. And it goes both ways. It's to let the kids know that it's okay for them to get in touch with the parents if there's any kind of trouble or if they've done something maybe that they shouldn't have done, that there's not going to be judgment, there's not going to be attitude. The parents will come get them, no questions asked, because you can deal with that the next day. What you don't want to deal with the next day is having a kid in the hospital or dead. And so it's a great resource, and I encourage parents to go check that out, Teenage Driving Contract, on our website. But great to be here on another day. Braves in the NLCS. We're very excited about all of it. It's been a heck of a week for Georgia sports. So
no kidding. Yeah, you know, it's so funny, but just to your parents' student or parent children contract, I always tell my son Jacob, who's 17, I'm like, everything is replaceable except you. Let's just do the right thing no matter what it is or when it is, because anything, the car, somebody else's car, whatever's going on, everything's replaceable except you. So I think that's so good. Ray, how do we get a hold of you in case we need your help?
Yeah, Ray Giudice. First of all, good morning. Ray Giudice, attorney at law, 404-964-4185. And I've got a web page too.
RayGiudiceLaw.com.
Yeah.
These days.
I remember when it first started, you know.
Right.
And, oh, man, I got a web page through Bell South, you know, and got three pictures. And I've got some information and some videotapes and how to do this and things I've done. And some of it's entertaining. Some got a lot of old video clips of Nancy Grace yelling at me on her old TV show. And I sometimes look at it just and say, man, what did I really do that, you know, late at night in front of a national audience? And it was fun. Come to the office, have a cup of coffee. I send me a document that you want me to review. And if you need a lawyer in an area of law that I don't handle, which is primarily criminal cases, trial work, some injury cases, I will get you to somebody that can handle that contract, that employment opportunity or restrictive covenant, which we're seeing so much of. I'm sure, Bruce, you get those calls. You know, I just got terminated, and they say I can't do this sales job in Metro Atlanta for the next 6 months. Hey, I don't remember signing that. Well, you did sign it, and most likely it's legal, but we'll take a look at it, or I'll get you to somebody to see if they can break it.
It's certainly a big issue in the radio business, and
it certainly is. Yeah.
You know, I'm not aware of having signed anything like that myself, but a lot of the on-air talent at every station has has issues like that in their contract.
I was able to leave Radio Korea and come directly here.
There you go. I love it. I want to get started this morning with a conversation about Georgia's former insurance commissioner Jim Beck. He was sentenced to federal prison this past Tuesday for a scheme to steal from his former employer. He was also ordered to pay $2.6 million in restitution. The judge said he betrayed people close to him for his fraud and then repeatedly lied on the witness stand. Federal boy, that's legit right there. That's when you're in trouble.
You're right about that. There is no messing around. And so Mr. Beck had been convicted back in July on 37 counts of fraud, money laundering, tax crimes, among other things. And so, you know, this is money that he stole, about $2.5 million, and used it to finance his campaign for reelection as Georgia's insurance commissioner. The money came from public funds, so it's taxpayer money that was stolen. But through the insurance commissioner's office, there's something created there called the Georgia Underwriting Association that has money to help purchase insurance for folks who are having trouble getting insurance, right? They're uninsurable for some reason. And so these funds are there to help support that. And so, you know, it's a real need, number one, and it's money that's siphoned out from the state of Georgia budget, which is funded entirely by us as taxpayers. So when you're stealing from that kind of a fund, they're going to throw the hammer at you.
One of the things the feds do is, by the time you get to trial or you're indicted, which happens first, they've generally got their case together. Their investigators are called special agents. I may have said this before. So Special Agent Giudice, I'm on the witness stand, and here's what the cross-examination sounds like. Special Agent Giudice, tell us about your educational background. Well, I went to Dartmouth undergrad with a major in political science. I went to Harvard. Then I was an 82nd Airborne. I'm a marksman. Okay, they are really good at what they do. Okay, and the jury is saying, I want you to marry my daughter or my son. Right. I want to adopt you, right. You know, right. And so you're already behind. But the truth is, they really are good at what they do. Going back to Herbert Hoover, who ran the FBI for generations, you were required as an FBI agent back then to have at least a master's degree or a law degree or be a CPA, so that you were an expert in the area of law enforcement that you were working on. So they put their cases together. They get the internet documents and the text messages. So by the time they call you and your lawyer in to see if you want to enter a plea and get the special box checked, which means you cooperated with us early on, maybe it led to some other prosecutions, you gave us some money, you came in there with at least half of the $2+ million in a cashier's check, he would have gotten a whole lot less than the 7 years in federal prison that the judge just sentenced him to. But he rolled the dice, went to trial, and lost, and he's going to pay the price.
Yeah, and apparently he thought that he could just sort of bluff his way through trial by giving all kinds of wild testimony, you know, talking about other folks being involved here who there was no evidence that some of them even existed, you know, let alone that there's any ability to figure out who they are or what their angle in this was. But, you know, it's we mentioned that this is the feds, right? And the feds don't mess around. And this is what you see here is an example of it. But it also shows you, I mean, this is a guy in Beck who is incredibly well-connected, incredibly gifted as a politician and fundraiser. And, you know, he was head of the Georgia chapter, the Christian Coalition. You know, I mean, this was a guy who had risen through the ranks and had a lot of people's trust and had the gift of gab, because sure, all the politicians do. Had this been tried in a state court, and certainly in a state court in a county where this person was known or had influence, who knows how that would have played out? You know, that's where you if you're ever going to see somebody getting a home field advantage, it's in certain state courts, especially rural state courts, where that kind of thing has been known to happen all over the country. And you know, it's refreshing to see somebody who is connected like that still having to face the judgment for the actions that they've done. You just don't see that typically.
It does feel that way.
It does feel that way. And so, you know, it's an example where money didn't save him. Connections didn't save him. Whatever politics he tried to work behind the scenes didn't save him. He had to face the wrath of a federal judge who, as we've talked about in the past, although they're appointed and have political appointments, they're there for life. They don't care about reelection or ticking off an electorate or anything mm-hmm. like that. They're there. So now we've got an interim insurance commissioner who's been in place for the last few years. There's an election coming up, and certainly this issue will be raised and discussed, but hopefully it's behind them and folks can sort of move on to whatever the heck it is that insurance commissioners do. Does anybody know?
I do not.
Right. Well, I know what they do. I'll tell you, I know some of what they do.
Yeah.
And among the things that they're charged with doing is regulating the insurance industry and punishing wrongdoers, making sure that the system is fair. We run into this all the time because there are several insurance companies, not to name names, but there's several of them out there who are just, when it comes to liability cases, like the ones that Ray and I handle, are the worst of the worst. They will never pay a fair settlement. They will never treat people fairly, and they just abuse the power that they have because they control the checkbook. Well, this is where a strong insurance commissioner can make a difference and step in and say, we're not tolerating this sort of behavior. When people have an insurance claim that's a valid insurance claim, it needs to be paid, and it needs to be paid fairly and promptly. And insurance companies can be punished for that sort of thing. But when I have people complain to me about the way that insurance companies treated them, I'll ask them the same question. How much money did you donate to the insurance commissioner's race in the last campaign?
Or who even just named the insurance commissioner.
Nobody knows. No. Right. And the answer is zero, because nobody donates money to that, right?
Except the insurance companies.
So I say, who do you think donates? Yeah,
that's
who
right.
Do you think gets these folks
elected? And the insurance defense firms.
And right. where is their loyalty going to be, if anywhere? Is it to the people, or is it to the people who keep them in office?
Yeah, let's talk about this man's day in court. And Bruce brought up a great issue, I think, great topic about where do the jurors come from? So this case probably could have been prosecuted in any one of the counties where the crime was committed, Fulton, DeKalb, or whatever county in the state of Georgia, 159 counties. And he would have had an advantage there if it was a county where maybe he grew up, went to school, went to church, does business. Some of the jurors say, hey, wait a second, old Jim's a pretty good fella. I don't think he did this. But instead, it's a federal jury pool, which is the Northern District of Georgia, which is probably going to maybe cover some of the counties where this man has some connections, but a whole different jury pool. And so he didn't get the home cook. The prosecution, he got home cooked by the federal prosecutors.
Yeah, and if there's more we want to cover on this, we can do it on the other side of the break, because there is a lot, I'm sure, that we can get into as far as, like, when does he have to go and report to be put in jail? Is he monitored during the time from now until that point? Like, what's happening to him? How does that work out? And we can cover some of that in the segment that's coming up here on Your Day in Court with Bruce Hagan and Ray Giudice as we talk about the indictment. Georgia's ex-insurance commissioner, Jim Beck, 7 years in federal prison. We'll continue this conversation, and then there's a couple other stories that we'd like to get to, including Atlanta's airport breaking a new record for guns seized by the TSA at checkpoint. What in the world is going on? Like, you just accidentally forget your gun? Anyway, we'll cover it all. Coming up next here on Extra 106.3, this is Your Day in Court with Bruce Hagan and Ray Giudice.
Marketing is everywhere. From the billboards on the highways to the notifications on your phone, we are constantly bombarded with people trying to sell us stuff. What makes good marketing? Are you doing enough in your life personally and professionally to market yourself? You have questions, and the Marketing Mad Men have answers. Search the Marketing Mad Men on Google or your favorite podcast provider to get practical marketing advice from expert guests who are shaping and reshaping the business world. They say marketing is a madman's game. Join the Marketing Mad Men every Saturday at 4 p.m. to find out why.
A lifetime of hard work. Children laughing in the kitchen. Family photos on a restaurant wall. A legacy that lives on. It all comes from the power of a conversation, like the one Tommy Hall had with First Horizon Bank about taking over his father's Charleston-based restaurant business. Now the table is set for a whole new generation. First Horizon Bank. Let's find a way. Go to firsthorizon.com/Tommy. First Horizon Bank, member FDIC.
This is Your Day in Court with Bruce Hagan and Ray Giudice on Extra 106.3.
Welcome back to Your Day in Court with Bruce Hagan and Ray Giudice on Extra 106.3. My name is Tug Cowart. We've been talking about Jim Beck, the ex-Georgia insurance commissioner that got 7 years in federal prison. What is it that he does from now until the date that he has to report to jail? What happens with him?
Well, he was on pretrial release on bond at home, house arrest, basically, up to trial. From the time of the indictment, he had to be booked in, of course, had to stay at home. He might have been released from home to go to the doctor, a couple things like that. And he will stay in the same situation, maybe a little more level of monitoring. We might monitor someone who was not guilty until proven guilty, and then has been proven guilty a little more. Sentencing is towards the end of the year. In that period of time, the federal probation department will do what's called a pre pre-sentencing investigation extremely thorough, and they will look at his entire background, his level of education, his work employment, any other criminal activity. And at the same time, his criminal defense team, his lawyers, will be submitting what we call mitigation evidence. We're trying to mitigate, lessen the amount of punishment. Big problem in federal cases, when you go to trial and you don't take that deal that the prosecution offered you up front early in the game, and there's a special box, literally, it's a box on a sentencing form that the prosecutors, the federal prosecutor says, yes, judge, he cooperated, and we want his sentencing to be towards the mandatory minimums rather than the maximums. So when you pass it up, now the lawyers have a really tough row to hoe, which is to push back against the prosecution's position. And of course, this judge listened to the evidence. The judge is bound by the jury's verdict. It's only a question of the magnitude of sentencing. They're going to put together letters, and probably there'll be some people of faith that will give that perspective. His favorite high school coach, next door neighbor, about how he mows their yard and comes over with cookies for Christmas.
It comes out from all directions.
When I do these things, and you know, sometimes we have to, even on a guilty plea, clients tend to think that the more of these letters, the better it is. Generally, it's not how I approach it. I tend to think if you can put one arrow through the middle of the target, you know, you're better off than arrows all over the place because it distracts. So that's what's going to happen. Where will he go? Probably not a maximum detention. We have two in this country. They're super maxes. One's in Marion, Illinois. That's the original one. There's another one out in Utah, and that's where the Unabomber and, you know, terrorist bombers and the guy that exploded the bomb at the Boston Marathon, that's where those people go. There may be people who were cheated in this case that feel that's where he should go, but I don't think so. Where in the country he's placed, that's actually a very important part of the sentencing, and that's actually something that the defense team will try to negotiate so that he can be perhaps placed near family. Or is there a medical unit? I don't know the gentleman's medical problems. And if that's part something that's existing, my mitigation team on behalf of my client is going to point out, hey, he's got a heart problem, he needs these medications, et cetera, et cetera. He's got an ailing family member that he is the sole provider for. Those things we want to bring out.
Yeah, what he might consider doing is converting to Orthodox Judaism and getting on a restrictive kosher-only
diet.
You know, I mean, I understand he's former head of the Georgia chapter of Christian Coalition, but it's never too late to change and, you know, become one of the chosen people. But within the federal prison system, there are certain facilities that accommodate folks who are of Orthodox Judaism faith. From what I understand, it's, you know, in the context of understanding that they're all prisons, right? None of this is going to the Four Seasons for a long weekend. But in relative comparison to some other federal prisons, it's apparently one of the best setups you could have. If anybody out there is listening, is facing this choice, you might want to consider letting your sideburns grow out, showing up in a long black coat, putting the yarmulke on,
talk
to the rabbi.
Never pay retail.
Don't pay retail. Hey, now you're just perpetuating stereotypes.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. Because I'm a Christian and I try to never pay retail either.
Yeah, there's a different than trying to not. Okay.
Yeah. It's forbidden.
Right. How did they come to the 7 years? Like, what's that process about?
Well, there's what we used to call sentencing guidelines, which were absolutely mandatory, you know, and federal judges really hated it because it took their discretion. And not every case is the same. You know, two people can be charged with the same statutory crime, but they could have different backgrounds and potentially different futures that a judge would like to take in place. And judges, you know, most judges wanted to be judges. They liked that aspect of it, and they didn't like their very important role in sentencing being so heavily restricted by those guidelines. Now they're guidelines with a small g. You know, it's very seriously suggested between this, so that there's some consistency. That's the flip side of that. So that the person that commits this federal crime in the Northern District of Georgia and is convicted by a jury here, and a person has exactly this, and it's this kind of fraud goes on everywhere in the country every day and more of it, that there's at least some equal or close to equal sentencing. And that's part of that. I did want to say something that Bruce brought up earlier about the jury pool. A lot of judges want the jurors in the state courts because the judges are elected, okay, every 4 years. So the jury comes back with a guilty verdict, and there's 12 jurors and two alternates. And the judges will say, all right, now, ladies and gentlemen, jury, we're going to sentence right now. We may take a 10-minute break. You're welcome to stay. You're welcome to stay. And the jurors love that. They love to see the judge. And why is that? Man, that's 12 votes. And they go back to their churches and their school boards, and they say, oh, that Judge Giudice threw the book. We did our job, and he did his job, and I'm going to vote for him if I can remember to next time around.
Right.
So that's it. And the feds, the judges are appointed for life. Absent high crimes and misdemeanors, they have to be impeached, right, under the Constitution, if I believe that's correct. If they're a constitutional appoint a judge, that has to be approved by the Senate, correct?
It happens.
Right.
I mean, there have been judges who have it's not easy.
It's not easy.
But it happens.
There was a federal judge in Florida, I think. Is it Hastings? Algie Hastings,
that
was convicted.
Right, yeah.
Well, guess what he did? He's now the congressperson from that district. I think he did pass away very recently within the last couple of years. So he went out and ran for re-election as a congressperson from that district. But nonetheless, the process is there.
Yeah, I'm telling you, there's a lot of information, a lot to wade through. It's so much different on a federal case than like you guys talk about.
It's a lot different.
I mean,
the lawyers that practice regularly in the federal courts,
yeah.
I'll see them in the state courts every once in a while, and vice versa. I'll take a federal case, but there really are specialists. And there's actually lawyers in this country, and a very dear friend of ours, Drew Findling, who's a fantastic lawyer here in Atlanta. He's actually a nationally known, not only federal defense lawyer, but a sentencing guy. I mean, he really understands the nuances in his team of how do you present a great mitigation package. Actually, how do you try the case? So that when you're in front of the judge on sentencing, you say, Your Honor, we raised some significant issues here. The jury struggled for 3 days. You don't want to overdo that. But he really is a pro. And there are those people out there that just get hired, lawyers, for the sentencing aspect of the case.
Yeah.
And the federal prosecutors are their own unique brand of lawyer. And you know, they're really, it's a tough job to get. It's a tough job to keep. But, man, there are some sharp folks down there who prosecute these cases. And, you know, unfortunately, they're really sort of immune from everything in the sense that they can handpick the cases they want to pursue. You know, Ray was saying that by the time somebody is indicted, there's so much evidence against them. Well, that should tell you that there were how many more cases where they didn't have that mountain of evidence. So they say, well, we don't have to prosecute one of these. So when a prosecutor is like, yeah, my conviction record is 99.9%.
Because he's able to hand select.
Yeah, how did you even lose that, one case there at all?
Well, plus is the unlimited resources. And I always say, you think you're tough? When you're indicted and it says the United States of America versus you, okay? Osama bin Laden had an indictment with his name on it. And it took SEAL Team 6 a little while, but they got him. And so they can put a witness on a plane or a private jet in Wisconsin and have him in court at 9:01 in a good suit. I mean, they can do what they need to do. They've got the experts at the lab up in Quantico the technology experts.
Yeah. Oh my
really need to have a good budget and a good defense team if you're federally indicted.
Yeah, man, I tell you. Yeah, it's fascinating to talk about. I want to change directions just a little bit because there's something going on at the airport that you may not realize. This is Your Day in Court with Bruce Hagan and Ray Giudice on Extra 106.3. Everybody knows Atlanta's the world's busiest airport, but apparently it is also very, very busy in the fact that they have confiscated 391 weapons at the airport. And it's like, wow. Why are people, first of all, why are you taking a weapon to the airport? Even if you have a concealed carry, you know, I think there's probably some rules on how all that stuff works. But for them to be so busy with this, and it's much greater than it was even in 2019, what happens when you decide that you are going to take a gun with you to the airport? How are you, because I assume you're arrested, right?
You are, and I get these cases.
Okay.
And there's really two separate types of cases. They're legitimately the person who carries a weapon, licensed, lawful weapon. It's not hot. The serial number hasn't been filed off.
Mm-hmm.
And they carry all the time. And they really did forget. They had it in their gym bag. Because they went to the gym, they needed to be armed.
Well, and, look, is it that different for that person Ray's describing than somebody who left their water bottle in the backpack and is like, oh, I forgot that was
exactly
there.
Right.
I have to
dump
out the water when I get there.
So there are those cases.
The difference is there's a $14,000 fine from the TSA.
Well, that's right. They're handled, they're sort of decriminalized. Is it against the law? Yes, it is. You're written a citation. And then you'll get a letter from the federal government, from TSA, that says, we're going to fine you X amount of dollars. So if it's a first offense, I think it runs around $3,000. I've seen that. And you can go down to federal courthouse and pay the fine and plead nolo. And it's just not a, it's not a, it's a problem because you got to pay the money and maybe hire me. But there's a different kind of case. And that's the case that just arose here at Atlanta Hartsfield, where somebody's trying to smuggle, what, a dozen or so guns in gaming machines. Now, that's a criminal. That's a criminal organization. Mm-hmm. Someone who's trying to move weapons through the system to get to probably nefarious people on the other side, not, you know, not duck hunters or people that are going to use these weapons for home defense.
So then when you are, like, what happens? The moment that they realize that you've got a gun, that that TSA scans it, whether it's in your bag, on your person, whatever it is, what happens from that second?
They escort you from the metal detector, from security, to a little room with no windows, and they sit you on a little plastic chair.
Yeah, right.
And immediately they're running a background check on you.
Right.
Do you have warrants? Out on bond, parole, are you a criminal? Have you had prior gun charges? Have you had problems with TSA? Like, you acted up on the plane and we had to wrestle you to the ground and duct tape you?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, this person's going to have some problems.
Yeah,
they're going to find their luggage if they check the bag. They're going to get that right off the plane. They're going to fly spec every last thing that you brought with you, because if you have these guns, what else do you have with you? Why are you carrying $12,000 in cash, which is
that seems
more
like to open up a different can of worms altogether.
How do you feel? I think everybody who's listening has had that experience of going through the airport and the TSA officers say, whose bag is this?
Mm-hmm.
And they're pointing to your bag.
You're
and you
like,
know
oh,
you don't
no.
have anything in it.
But still.
How do you feel at that moment?
Yeah. Right? So I want to tell a war story. I get an emergency call. This is a couple of years ago before COVID, when a lot of people were traveling, from a prospective client. And she's saying that her boyfriend, who had just flown in from another town, is running, literally at this moment, on the cell phone, running through Hartsfield. Without his shoes on and his belt, because they had gone through the metal detector, because they found the gun, and he's running.
And he takes off.
And so, of course, they're following him on the cameras. He gets on the MARTA train, and, of course, they're waiting for him when he gets off the MARTA train. So that case went from something that was very manageable, because he really did forget. Now, there was a little bit of a problem with the gun. It was a very old gun. And the serial numbers have been filed off, which in and of itself is a crime, which led law enforcement to say, well, let's take it out to the GBI. And they shot the bullet in the bucket of wax or water or whatever they do in ballistics. I'm not demeaning it, but they tested it to see if the gun could be linked up to any further crimes. Fortunately, it was not.
Mm-hmm.
So we were able to resolve that matter. But he really compounded the problem. First of all, don't have a gun with the serial number filed off trying to get through the security at Hartsfield or any other airport.
And then don't break the law while breaking the law.
That's right. But it also raises a point, and you know, Ray is 100% right about this. It comes up in a lot of different contexts. There's a problem, right? This guy is caught traveling with a gun. That's a problem. It's a problem that we as lawyers can deal with and fix. It's what he did after that.
Yeah.
That's when you say, like, hey, look, I might have been able to resolve this for you, and you know, you only had to pay me $1,000. I could go take care of this in a day and we'll be done. But now, you know, this is going to cost you $25,000 to hire me. And by the way, you're going to be spending some time in jail because now I can't fix this because you're so stupid for what you did after you were caught. And it comes up in all kinds of financial transactions, right? You get caught, but the things you did afterwards to hide it are
worse. There's the crime and there's the cover up.
It comes up in civil context. And I hate to say it, we've seen it with lawyers that we know and doctors that we know. They make a mistake. It's malpractice. You make a mistake, right? But it's a mistake, and the mistake can be accounted for in the sense that if it's a mistake that rises to the level of legal or medical malpractice, then there's a damages amount that goes along with that based on whatever harm the mistake caused. And most every lawyer and most every doctor is going to have insurance to cover that sort of thing. But then when the lawyer or a doctor lies about the mistake or tries to cover up that mistake by destroying documents, changing documents, creating false documents, trying to get people to lie for them, like among their staff. Now you've taken a problem that was manageable, that you made a mistake, mistakes happen, can be addressed. Now you've injected fraud into it and maybe brought other folks into it, and now you're going to get the worst imaginable treatment. You may not even be insured against that sort of behavior.
And that's where the word punitive damages often comes in the civil world. Yep. Is what did you do? Not only the act of negligence, it's the cover-up. It's the punitive that you need to be punished, not for making a mistake. Okay, financially you made a mistake or whatever. The insurance company writes a check or your premiums go up. Mm. That's not a good day for any professional to have those kind of claims in those kind of cases. But it's the cover-up where you may lose your license to practice law or medicine and maybe commit a crime.
Spying on the Democratic National Committee is not what did Nixon in. It was the cover-up afterwards.
That's right.
That really is why Nixon ended up, right, out of office.
Yeah.
So, among other things.
Do y'all, as practicing lawyers, do you take that into account? I'm sure you do, right? Like the guy went through with the gun. Guy went through with the gun and then ran. Like is that actually a case that you steer away from, or is that the one you actually want to jump in and help? I don't steer
away from any case.
Yeah, okay, all right.
As long as they can afford them, they don't rate and steer away from anything.
Come on in.
No, I mean, look, here, in the personal injury context, there are cases we steer away from, but there are cases where I don't even believe a client. Or they have a claim that I just feel, hey, look, because of various factors, and there might be 50 different ones we're looking at, this is just not the sort of claim we can be successful on, and I would rather have this conversation with you on the front end than on the back end. So we turn away a select few, and certainly there's some that just don't hit the threshold of really being worth pursuing. But I still try to help folks even with those kind of cases, because if I can spend a little bit of time or devote the resources of my office to help somebody like that, even with a tiny little case, I want to help people, and I know what they're up against with the evil empire of insurance companies. So, and you never know when the person you help remove a thorn from their paw has something that's much greater than that, and they remember that, you did me a favor and didn't charge me anything and didn't ask for anything, and you didn't have to do that, and four other lawyers hung up on me, but you're the one who helped. When grandma gets run over by a reindeer with a lot of coverage, they call you up and you handle that case.
The soft sprain whiplash case of today is the herniated disc case of tomorrow, right, Bruce? Well, there are two kinds of cases I shy away from. There are clients that come to my office and they have a 1 foot thick file folder, and they've been released by three prior lawyers on their case, and I look at least one or two, and I say, these are pretty good lawyers. There's either something wrong with the case or something wrong with the client or some deadly combination of both that these lawyers fired, released themselves from the case. So that's one I shy away from. The second is, and please, if anybody's listening, don't say these words to any lawyer. This is an open and shut case.
There's no such thing.
Yeah, okay? Right. It's just no such thing.
Right.
There's no such thing as an easy root canal. There's no such thing as minor heart surgery. And there's nothing like an open and shut case. It does not work that way.
Yeah. You said, though, that they fired themselves. Is that just meaning they just didn't take the case, or like they took it and then
could
then
be a little mixture of both. Sometimes clients will come to me. We'll do the consultation. I'll review the file. And 3 or 4 days later, without signing a contract, and I tell them, I'll let them know. And I'll say, thank you. We can't represent you in this matter. I usually keep it very, very, business reasons. The statute of limitations is 2 years from the date of your accident or whatever. The Atlanta Bar, the Georgia Bar have a free referral service. Good luck. If they've signed a contract, I have a little more thorough letter, because I'm exiting the contract as paragraph 12 of my contract allows me to do. I send that certified. I send it by FedEx. I send it to email. I text it. I make sure they got that.
All the different routes.
Because that person left my office having signed a contract, thinking that we're representing them. We need to make sure they know we're not representing them.
Mm-hmm. Right. And there are bar rules for that as well. Ray and I are part of a profession that's governed by the State Bar of Georgia. And so there are rules about how you're supposed to go about doing that and terminating the contract. And Ray's exactly right. When there have been other lawyers involved, we need to know what happened. I always will ask somebody if they want me to review a case that some other lawyer has. I'm going to call the lawyer with your permission. If they don't give me permission, that's enough of an answer right there. But we had one come in the last few months, and she says, this is a $1 million case, and this lawyer, he had it for a month, and they turned it away. And I said, you know, that's interesting because I know that lawyer, and even if I didn't, I know lawyers, and I haven't known any of them to walk away from million-dollar cases.
A third of a $1 million case carried a two. Wait a second, that's real money.
At some point, that's going to become real money. So I said, I'm going to look a little further into this. I didn't just hang up on her. You know why? Because it might have been a $1 million case.
Yeah, might have been. Absolutely.
I mean, who am I to judge at that point? But I certainly wanted to look into it and find out what's what. And of course, when I called the lawyer, guess what? It wasn't.
It wasn't a million-dollar case.
Well, it was a $1 million case with $1,000 worth of insurance coverage. Sometimes one of the problems, and let's talk about one thing that I'm seeing come up, and Bruce, I'm probably in your practice. Hospitals, if you go to a hospital in an automobile accident case for treatment, I mean, I'm talking about from the ER to being in surgery, everywhere in between, the hospital has a statutory, that means Georgia law, lien on your personal injury case for the amount of services reasonable and customary. That lien, we lawyers have to honor that. The insurance company won't settle the case unless we sign documents that we're going to satisfy the lien. Increasingly, hospitals are not turning their bills over to Medicare, Medicaid, Peach Care, and some insurance companies because they know it's going to get cut down and reduced under an agreement. So $100,000 worth of medical services by whatever hospital, right? They get $27,000 back. They'd rather have a $100,000 lien on your $1 million case because they're going to get 100 cents on the dollar. It's been challenged, and the Georgia Court of Appeals is upholding those liens.
This may be a topic we need to come back and discuss separately because it's really a horrible thing that affects consumers on a daily basis. So many of my clients, especially when I have that great privilege of representing a North Fulton or Cobb County Republican, they just can't believe that a trial lawyer is here trying to help them and that a medical provider is trying to steal from them.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what's happening because the medical providers are stealing money right out of the pockets of injured patients who have health insurance that's supposed to pay their bills and instead is taking money right out of their pockets that should be there for the injured person.
Well, let's talk about that in the final segment. We got about 9 minutes and we'll go over that next on Your Day in Court with Bruce Hagan and Ray Giudice.
Marketing is everywhere. From the billboards on the highways to the notifications on your phone, we are constantly bombarded with people trying to sell us stuff. What makes good marketing? Are you doing enough in your life personally and professionally to market yourself? You have questions, and the Marketing Mad Men have answers. Search the Marketing Mad Men on Google or your favorite podcast provider to get practical marketing advice from expert guests who are shaping and reshaping the business world. They say marketing is a madman's game. Join the Marketing Mad Men every Saturday at 4 p.m. to find out why.
This morning in North Carolina, wheels are spinning. Determination is winning. A passion is now a thriving business. And it shows no signs of slowing down. How? The power of a conversation. Like the one Clint Spiegel had with First Horizon Bank about starting a bike wheel manufacturing facility in Asheville. Now it's not just talk, it's rubber meets road. First Horizon Bank. Let's find a way. Go to firsthorizon.com/Clint. First Horizon Bank, member FDIC.
This is Your Day in Court with Bruce Hagan and Ray Giudice on Extra 106.3.
Welcome back to Your Day in Court with Bruce Hagan and Ray Giudice on Extra 106.3. My name is Tug Cowart. We were just talking about guns at the airport. We now have a foolproof plan to help all the shootings that happen at Lenox Mall, and it's provided free of charge by Bruce Hagan.
Yeah, and you know, look, I'm not running for Atlanta City Council. I'm not running for mayor. I don't have a political agenda. I'm certainly not in favor of City of Buckhead seceding from the City of Atlanta. But I do have a plan that I believe would absolutely eliminate gun violence and most, if not all, of the crime at Lenox Mall itself. Anybody who's been to Lenox Mall knows the physical layout. You've got an enormous parking lot that circles the entire building and then various entrances to the building. They've started putting metal detectors in some, but not all, of the entrances, which is good. Maybe you need them at the other ones. But here's my plan. It's very simple. You charge $20 per person in each vehicle to enter that parking lot. $20 per person. And with that $20, each person gets a voucher for $20 to spend inside the mall.
Mm-hmm.
I understand that this might create a hardship for those who don't have $20, but I would ask, if you don't have $20 to spend, why are you going to the mall?
That's a very good point.
So $20 to get into the parking lot per person inside the car, then they can spend it anywhere you go inside that mall. You take that voucher, you get $20 worth of food, worth of clothes, worth of perfume, maybe for a back rub or chair massage, whatever they do with the kiosks.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And you keep out the folks who are just circling the lot looking to pick off the limping doe at the back of the herd. You eliminate vendetta crimes or folks who are specifically following somebody to try to get after them. I think it's a doable and really workable plan that will eliminate 99% of the violence at Lennox Mall and make customers who are there to shop feel more comfortable.
Well, I like the plan. I like the idea. But let me suggest something a little different.
Okay.
Bruce and I grew up in metro New York City areas. And when we were kids in the 60s and 70s, the biggest crime deterrent in New York City at the time was a New York City cop, two of them, walking side by side swinging a billy club.
Yeah.
Why don't you put some foot soldiers, feet on the ground, boots on the ground, real law enforcement in that facility and in every place where there's crime. I love the officers in their cars, but they're in their damn cars.
Yeah.
New York City, you know, the other one was an officer on a horse.
Yeah. Right.
And that's how, you know, every parade, every foreign dignitary that comes to New York City is greeted by an army of New York City cops on horses, helmets, and swinging batons. And you know what doesn't happen? Problems.
Yeah.
I see where you're coming from. Of course, there'd be backed up traffic all up and down
Piedmont. I like horses in the mall, though. That sounds fun. Horse mounted police
I'm telling you, I think four officers.
Yeah, just boots on the ground.
And it would be a huge deterrent, and it would solve, you know, there'd be somebody there right away.
It also ties in, and you know, these are incidents of shootings that are taking place. There was one Wednesday this week that was initially reported to be at Lennox Mall. Turns out it was at an apartment complex near Lennox Mall. Look, these get a lot of attention. Shootings in Buckhead get a lot of attention from the media when they happen. At the same time, on the same day, you had shootings in Southwest Atlanta on Jackson Street, on Roosevelt Drive in Southeast Atlanta. You had a person shot, Dahlia Avenue, a burglar shot. There are shootings all over Atlanta. The FBI reported a 30% uptick in murders in the last year nationwide. You know, it's a problem everywhere. We talked about the guns at the airport, and it all ties in. You know, I mean, I understand some people think the solution is, well, if everybody had a gun, then nobody would be a victim of gun violence. I disagree with that wholeheartedly. I think we have a problem with a proliferation of guns everywhere and guns falling into the hands of all the wrong people. You know, separate from that, I think like you have to get control of the situation of people just walking around who shouldn't be armed. You know, there's no more settling of a dispute with a punch in the nose. That was another thing, in the days of
that
cops with billy
anymore.
Clubs. You know, a conflict on the street typically ended with somebody just punched. And now, you know, a person is not punched, they're shot, and somebody just runs away.
And as somebody who's in the system on a regular basis, let me throw this out. The City of Atlanta Police Department is under-personed by several hundred officers. They're underfunded. The starting salaries for some of these officers are in the mid to high 30s. Are you kidding me? We're going to ask somebody to put their life on the line to defend us for $37,500. And I could be off by a couple thousand,
but I'm not off by much.
Low.
The number's low.
That's right. And they need help. And politically, what they don't need is, quite frankly, leadership from the top that throws them under the bus and walks away from them.
Which we've seen.
Okay. And secondly, and there's a great article in our favorite New York Times about what a failure the Democratic-led defund the police policy has been, when in fact in every city that policy started, it has been, all the law enforcement has been refunded and extra funding, because what? That didn't work. It didn't work in Minneapolis. It's not working in Atlanta. It didn't work in L.A. That's a failure. And I'll tell you something, and Bruce, you know, sometimes you and I disagree about politics a little bit. The Republican Party is going to hang that around the Democratic Party's neck in upcoming elections, because that's their mantra. And it is a failure. And it was a knee-jerk reaction. and it backstabbed all the good law enforcement officers out there every day that are doing their job.
Yeah, and there was Morgan Freeman, the actor, and you guys may have seen this too. He came out and said, I am not in favor of any way of defunding the police. I think most police officers are trying to do the right thing. There are people.
And I'm saying also, I want to include all of public safety. You know,
right,
our
sure,
fire people, sure. Our EMTs. Try to put out a fire at 3 o'clock in the morning in February, and you've got a crowd that's getting in your way and won't back off, and they're making TikTok videos. I mean, it's insane what's going on out there. So
yeah, and I think the biggest failure of all that is the branding of it. The phrase defund the police in branding, and you know, so do your marketing better, do your market research better, reform the police,
help the police.
How
about help the police?
Help the police. When you talk about funding, you know, nobody wants a social worker coming to the scene of a guy with a gun who just shot somebody at anywhere, but you do have the ability to say that, yeah, we've got a lesser level of engagement that we're going to send out to this particular domestic scrap or this fight in a parking lot. There are other things you could do.
All for it.
Interestingly, in Atlanta, Kasim Reed is running on a platform of, I'm going to add 750 police officers and we're going to give them all raises. Well, what do you think Kasim Reed got criticized for and hammered and why he didn't get reelected was because he cut the police officers' pensions and wouldn't pay them when he was the mayor of Atlanta. Mm-hmm. Now, the police and firemen have come out in support of Kasim Reed because he's saying we're going to get you your money this time, you know.
So it'll be interesting to see how the Atlanta mayoral race plays out. Quickly, we got about a minute left. Folks need your help. Bruce, how do they get to you?
Yeah, it's really easy to find me. Hagen-law.com is the website. You can email me, bruce@hagen-law.com. You can call me 404-522-7553. Always available, always quick to return phone calls. Some lady called us recently just needing help to figure out how to get her will together. And so we connected her to somebody good, as well as gave her some self-help remedies. And there's nothing you're going to say that's going to shock or offend me. So give a call. You can even try. Yeah. I challenge you to try.
Right. That's funny. Henry.
Ray Giudice, 404-964-4185. And let me just say to all you Spider-Men, cat women, what's that new thing in Korea where they're killing themselves playing games? It's the game show.
Yes.
Whatever it is,
know.
Yeah, sperm whale or something crazy. Don't, and when you're wearing those outfits this year and you get a DUI.
Squid game.
All you squid gamers, be careful Halloween night. It's turned into this huge adult party, which is great. I like an adult party, but it's turned into a huge trap from law enforcement for partiers dressed in your Spider-Man outfit and doing that walk and turn. I've got some great videos. I've got to keep them, you know, it's confidential. But
pay the upcharge to Uber and Lyft.
Right,
on Halloween
night.
Take the ride share home and do yourself a favor.
The best one I have is the carload of Teenage Mutant Ninjas that overturned and scrambled all through the neighborhoods. It's fantastic.
That's all we need. You can get them at RayGLaw.com. This is Your Day in Court on Extra 106.3.
This morning in the Atlanta airport, no one's missing a meal on Mac Wilburn's watch. With 11 restaurants to serve passengers, he's got dining for every destination. And it all started when Mac talked with First Horizon Bank about opening a franchise in the airport. Now it's open for business and cleared for takeoff. First Horizon Bank. Let's find a way. Go to firsthorizon.com/Mac. First Horizon Bank, member FDIC.
Marketing is everywhere. From the billboards on the highways to the notifications on your phone, we are constantly bombarded with people trying to sell us stuff. What makes good marketing? Are you doing enough in your life personally and professionally to market yourself? You have questions and the Marketing Mad Men have answers. Search the Marketing Mad Men on Google or your favorite podcast provider to get practical marketing advice from expert guests who are shaping and reshaping the business world. They say marketing is a madman's game. Join the Marketing Mad Men every Saturday at 4 p.m. to find out why.
The Fan is ready for Brave season. Are you?
3-1 smoked high in the air, deep center field, and heading for the horizon. A home run by Olsen.
We're streaming every game of the Braves 2024 season free on the 680 The Fan app.
So make sure you download it now and don't miss a pitch of the Braves this season.